And this is the Winchester Talking Newspaper for Friday the 20th of February 2015. Hello and welcome to the Winchester and District Talking Newspaper with extracts from the Hampshire Chronicle for the week ending 20th of February 2015. And this week, the editors were Bill Argles, Irene Dowding and Kate Butler. And your readers today are Shirley Parnell.
Hello.
Noel Thorpe-Tracy.
Hello.
And Jane Harding.
Hello.
And I'm your presenter, Roy Faithful. Now, the main headlines this week are Leader Resigns in Silver Hill Aftermath, Tributes pour in after teen athlete's sudden death, and affordable homes out of reach of working families. So may we have the first story, please, Shirley?
Leader resigns in Silver Hill aftermath. The leader of Winchester City Council has resigned over the political turmoil surrounding the Silver Hill scheme. Councillor Rob Humby stepped down on Tuesday amid fallout from last week's High Court ruling, which said civic chiefs acted unlawfully over the £165 million development. In a statement published on Tuesday afternoon, Councillor Humby said, "Over the last week I have reflected carefully on my position as leader of the council. I've come to the conclusion that the time has now come for me to step aside. I stand by the decisions I and the Cabinet made on Silver Hill. They were taken after consulting with officers and taking external legal advice. I think it is also important to remember that the majority of decisions on Silver Hill were taken long before I was leader. Nevertheless, I was leader when the court decision was handed down, and so must take responsibility for that judgment. I have been proud to lead the City Council and wish my successor the very best." Last week's ruling said that the Council acted unlawfully by allowing radical changes, dropping a bus station and 100 affordable homes without inviting bids from other developers. Lib Dem leadership nominee Kelsey Lerney said Councillor Humby's position had become untenable. She said that her first priority, if elected, would be to kickstart an independent Silver Hill review. "But the council has a great deal of other things to do," she added, "like station approach, the leisure centre and budgetary problems. I think it's really important that these don't get forgotten in all the Silver Hill mess. There are certainly issues around major projects where there seem to be decisions made behind closed doors with not much information coming into the public domain." Two votes of no confidence against Councillor Humby were planned for tonight's meeting by opposition parties threatening to overshadow crucial budget-setting talks. His is the second departure this week over the hugely controversial Silver Hill plans. Labour leader Chris Pines dramatically stood down as chairman of the Overview and Scrutiny Committee on Monday, walking out of a Guildhall meeting after saying he had lost the support of colleagues over his examination of the project. Local Government Secretary Eric Pickles has halted development while he decides whether to call in the scheme. Silver Hill campaigner Councillor Kim Gottlieb has urged Chief Executive Simon Eden, Corporate Director Steve Tilbury and Head of Estates Kevin Warren to step down. He criticised misleading advice given to councillors. "I'm genuinely sorry that things got to a point where Councillors Humby and Pines had to resign," Councillor Gottlieb said. "They're both decent men and did their best to serve this city. The problem they both faced is that, in respect of Silver Hill and probably other major projects, such as the River Park Leisure Centre, they had to rely heavily on advice they received from senior officers, which simply wasn't good enough and was sometimes misleading. Councillor Lerney, who last week warned that the judgment pushes the city closer to a financial cliff, has said the Lib Dems will table a revised budget within months if elected. Winchester MP Steve Brine said, "Rob Humby is a decent, honourable man, and I think his measured statement shows that. This has to be used as an opportunity for the council to regenerate what is a fast deteriorating part of town in a way that, this time, takes many more of my constituents with them."
Let's have the second headline story, please, Noel.
Yes, tributes have been paid to a popular teen athlete after she died suddenly. Allegra Whittam was a competitive 16-year-old who was renowned for her talents on the track and in the show ring. But her school and sports friends were devastated after the news that she had died, having fallen ill with a brain condition and pulled out of a competition hours before it was due to start. Mystery surrounds exactly what caused the teenager's death, which is now at the centre of an investigation by the coroner's office. Allegra passed away on Saturday, February the 7th, shortly after becoming unwell. She was a keen sportswoman representing Winchester and District Athletics Club and her school and county at lacrosse, athletics and cross country. She was also a highly skilled equestrian, pentathlete, tennis and netball player, and her greatest ambition was to become a Team GB athlete. Allegra was a Year 11 pupil at St Swithin's Private Girls' School in Winchester, where she had undertaken a number of charitable initiatives, including introducing to St Swithin's a charity called Ed Club, helping disadvantaged children in a slum in Nairobi with their education. St Swithin's headmistress, Jane Gandhi, described her as an enormously talented and outstanding pupil both in the classroom and on the sports field, and her generous spirit touched everyone she met. Allegra's enthusiasm and determination were legendary. "We all admired her steadfast moral compass. She had a wonderful sense of humour, and she'll be greatly missed. Our thoughts and prayers are with her family at this most difficult of times." Her devastated family requested privacy. In a statement, they said Allegra was the most perfect daughter and sister that anyone could imagine. She competed for Winchester and District Athletics Club, whose chairman, Pete Spellman, said Allegra was a top all-round athlete that competed regularly for WADAC, Hampshire and St Swithin's School. "Full of life and enthusiasm, Allegra loved competing. She was a massive team player in David Voss's and Pete Spellman's training squad and was loved by all her teammates. We shall all miss her big time." In 2013, Allegra raised money for the Little Princess Trust charity when she had 12 inches of her hair cut off by Guy Kramer. Allegra lived in Lower Weald near Alsford and was the daughter of Lucy and Ashley Whittam, a former city banker with Credit Suisse First Boston and director of numerous Hampshire companies. The Hampshire Hunt Pony Club also paid tribute. "She was one of our best-loved seniors and a fantastic sportswoman who represented the Pony Club at all levels." And this is accompanied by a lovely picture of Allegra in her athletics kit in action.
Jane, can we have the third headline story, please?
And here we have affordable homes out of reach of working families. Affordable homes to be built in Wick this spring will be out of reach for many working families, a meeting heard. Work on the controversial Westman Road scheme is set to start in April after contracts were approved. Civic chiefs will cut rents on the 12 homes after bosses received a cheaper-than-expected deal from construction firm F.E. Chase. It came amid debate over how the new affordable homes might exclude low-income workers. Labour councillor Janet Berry told the Cabinet Housing Committee, "The lowest rent here is actually higher than social rent. It really needs to be looked at that the council is charging rents that everyone can afford to live at, not just certain people. It has to be for everyone." New units range from £147 to £225 per week, with a three-bed house costing £170. This is cheaper than many new affordable units in the city, rented at 80% of market prices, but significantly more expensive than traditional council houses. Before giving planning permission to build on the Week playground in September, the council received dozens of objections and a petition from more than 200 residents bemoaning the loss of green space. After the meeting, local ward councillor Anne Weir promised a big consultation across the Week community about how to replace the facilities by improving Taplings Road Community Centre, Dean Park or St Matthew's Field. The City Council is considering forming a money-making housing company to generate profits for its own affordable homes, which could bring rents down.
And that concludes our headline stories. We're going to continue with death notices and Christian comment, followed by letters to the editor, Your Say, historical items, Belgarum Diary, first person and editorial comment. And I'll start with the death notices. Bailey, Peter Bailey, after a short illness. Barnard, Ray Barnard, after a long determined fight with cancer. Beale, Ivan D. Beale, at the Royal Hampshire County Hospital after illness, aged 86. Bolt, Beryl, nay, Frode Bolt, suddenly at aged 85. Chandler, Marjorie Chandler, late of Trussell Crescent, peacefully at the Flower Down Care Home. Cromie, Tom Cromie, peacefully aged 94. Ealing, Jackie Ealing. Johnston, nay, Joyce Angela Johnston. Latter, Catherine, nay, Newbolt Latter, aged 94. Reed, Dick Reed, peacefully aged 84. Scott, David Scott, in hospital, aged 71. Sherwood, William Bill Sherwood, peacefully at Royal Hampshire County Hospital, aged 86. Watt, Alec Watt, peacefully at the Countess of Brecknock Hospice, aged 94. And finally, Wichard, Mary Linear, nay Henstridge Wichard. Now we've got Christian comment read by Shirley.
Right, and it's headed Remembering Our Mortality on Ash Wednesday, and it's written by Paul Kennedy. Remember you are dust, and to dust you shall return. With these words, the priest ashed my forehead and reminded me that I'm going to die. It's part of our Ash Wednesday ritual, which we commemorated this week. In a death-denying culture, the remembrance of mortality is strangely liberating. In recent generations, death is hidden away, often removed from the home, with final days and hours spent in a high-tech hospital environment. At the same time, we have a cult of youth and offers of the rich escaping death with cryogenic technology. However, Christianity embraces the reality of death, not with popular images of a soul slipping into the next room, but with St. Paul's recognition that God alone is immortal. Death will come to us all. The contemporary philosopher Mark Vernon argues that our awareness of death enriches our life. It heightens love by bringing loss. It deepens beauty by fomenting decay. It focuses life by providing an end. For me, the beauty of mortal life is demonstrated by the fragile allure of a windswept and frozen crocus on a February lawn. An artificial flower would offer a longer, even open-ended life, but the crocus beauty is heightened by vulnerability and decay. In the same way, many are drawn to the sea as a focus for contemplation and meditation, leading the Christian mystic Simone Weil to reflect, "The sea is not less beautiful in our eyes because we know that sometimes ships are wrecked upon it." The awe-inspiring power of the sea brings both life and death, and each of these attracts us. So what of our Christian tradition? We look forward to a hope of resurrection to eternal life, but this is not an endless Groundhog Day where our existence in time carries on and on and on with inevitable repeats. Eternity is beyond time, not part of our linear experience of the here and now. In reality, eternal life starts now. We are called beyond our everyday concerns to a life that fully engages our senses, imagination, and longing. A life that transcends our self-absorbed concerns. We are called to live our lives, sub specie, from the perspective of the eternal. William Blake put this beautifully in words I often repeat at a funeral. To see the world in a grain of sand and heaven in a wild flower, hold infinity in the palm of your hand and eternity in an hour.
We'll continue with letters to the editor. If you wish to contact the Hampshire Chronicle, you can do so by telephoning 01962 860 836. The email address is news@hampshirechronicle.co.uk, or writing to the editor can be done to 5 Upper Brook Street, Winchester, S0238AL. Now we've got 8 letters this week, and we'll start with one read by Noel.
Yes, and Karen Barrett says, admit defeat and start again. Sir, while I regret the damage done to Winchester City Council's reputation by the High Court ruling on Silver Hill, in my opinion, the judge made the correct decision. The tone of the City Council's response, however, indicates the same degree of arrogance which got them into this mess in the first place. Leader Rob Humby seems to be justifying the council's stance because the decision is at odds with, quote, external legal advice and the initial rejection of the judicial review, unquote. The latter point is irrelevant, as the only judgment that counts is the most recent. As for the external legal advice, I'm not a lawyer, but I have been involved with and continue to take an interest in legal challenges relating to planning matters, and I regarded the council's strategy over the judicial review as high risk, to say the least. In the light of uncertainty about the outcome, the decision to go ahead with considering the planning application before the court process was completed was also unacceptable and stupid. The City Council should now admit defeat and start the whole process again. I sincerely hope the option of an appeal is rejected. Enough public money has already been wasted. Karen Barrett, Byron Avenue, Winchester.
And Tony Mundy writes, joining queue to congratulate Kim. Sir, I appreciate that I will most probably be in a long queue of readers ready to congratulate Councillor Gottlieb on his perseverance in pursuing Winchester City Council in addressing the concerns of a large number of local residents regarding the Silver Hill development. I suspect that he will also receive great support in his request to the Big Four to tender their resignations for incompetence. The judicial review states quite simply and straightforwardly that they acted unlawfully. However, they in turn receive the backing from other councillors from all persuasions, which does not bode well for us. There were a handful of honest councillors who did see the light and took the appropriate action to distance themselves from law-breaking. So, where do we go from here? Will this inept regime waste more taxpayers' money and appeal against Mrs. Justice Lang's decision? I sincerely hope not, but transparency is certainly not their strong point, and they will certainly not invoke change to represent those who are clear-thinking enough to oppose them. And that was from Tony Mundy, Wood Green Road, Hairstock, Winchester.
And on the same subject, this is from Norman Few, and the letter is headed, Council's manner not acceptable. Sir, read the judgment on Silver Hill. I hope the council will now act more democratically and allow the public to view full details of any proposed scheme so that they can give their views before any approval of the proposals is given. The council's previous arrogant and dictatorial manner is not acceptable. Norman Few, Larch Close, Kingsworthy.
And, of course, frequent contributor Phil Yates has to have his contribution. He says, "Take heed and listen to the people. Sir, after Mrs. Justice Lang's decision to uphold the challenge by City Councillor Kim Gottlieb in the High Court last week regarding the ill-fated Silver Hill redevelopment scheme, perhaps now Councillor Rob Humby and his team will take heed and listen carefully to the wishes of citizens who strongly objected to the planning proposals in the first place. It is now a question of going back to the drawing board and starting all over again. I submit that the first step is to rescind the contract with Henderson and resubmit fresh planning proposals to EU-wide competitive developers, which should have been done in the first place. Forget the monstrous high buildings that were in the original plans and concentrate on a new bus station, similar to Wolverhampton, with retail shops surrounding it. No departmental stores are necessary. Affordable housing and a landscaped area. Simple. While they're at it, demolish the Brook Shopping Centre and rebuild a proper one. Even Henderson's spokesman recently commented on the present design. In the meantime, congratulations to Kim Gottlieb for all his efforts. Phil Yates, Tower Street, Winchester."
And continuing, Eunice Stevens. "Views cannot be ignored any longer. Sir, when will the leader of Winchester City Council realise that he cannot continue ignoring the views of intelligent, perceptive, caring and dedicated members of the Winchester community? Councillor Humby was nowhere to be seen in the face of hundreds of residents at the Winchester Deserves Better demonstration. Silver Hill has now become a national issue, as Charles Claver's excellent article in the Sunday Times of February the 8th clearly illustrates. Neither did Councillor Humby acknowledge the views of those who braced freezing conditions in the Cheswell Street car park, protesting about it being the proposed site for a four-storey care home. Right idea, wrong place was our slogan. Notwithstanding, the plans have been approved. The Hampshire Chronicle's editorial comment of Thursday, February the 5th, stated that Winchester is getting older. It does not follow that this development is the price Winchester simply has to pay in the 21st century. What does simply follow is that our City Council has a duty of care to present cogent solutions to the issues which are facing us, in which the long-term implications are given due cognizance. I challenge Councillor Humby to push a wheelchair along the narrow pavements of Cheswell Street. I challenge him to provide answers to all the implications of the Winchester Village development on the Romsey Road. Your search ends here, proclaims the marketing hoardings. It may well do, if you are sufficiently affluent to afford a deposit. If so, where will the search for a school place for your child or children end? How will you arrive at work on time, given the hideous traffic tailbacks that already occur in that vicinity? Riding roughshod over us simply will not work, because in a nutshell, Winchester's residents deserve better. That being said, warmest congratulations to Councillor Gottlieb and others who have remained true to their principles for appropriate development of our remarkable city." And that was Eunice Stevens, Cliffway, Compton.
And this one from Harry Warwood, headed "Match History with Future Demands." "Sir, the judicial review judgment is a victory for Winchester, not for any one side or view. This opportunity must now be seized by us all to ask the council to withdraw from the scheme and to revert to the original design brief. Instead of one single megalithic scheme, a number of smaller and more easily managed schemes designed by local and national architects should be melded together to mirror the ambience and look of the whole city. Come on, Council, don't be small-minded. Be big and bold and help the city evolve by properly matching its history and heritage to its future demands, and in doing so, lead the way to show others how to do it. Harry Warwood, The Square, Winchester."
And Jeff Brutti asks, "How long can they hold out?" "Sir, what incredible arrogance. One might have thought that with public opinion demonstrably against him, and now with a judicial review deciding that the council acted unlawfully over the Silver Hill fiasco, Councillor Humby might have stopped to consult with his colleagues and admit that maybe things could have been handled better and perhaps they should reconsider policy. Instead, he announces that the scheme has democratic support and can be developed, but warning council taxpayers that if the development is delayed, they would have to pay up to cover judicial and other costs. It gives one the impression that there is a massive deceit being perpetrated on the people of Winchester. In December, at the planning committee meeting which gave final approval to the scheme, the council meekly accepted Henderson's claim that they could not profitably supply any affordable homes, despite a complete lack of evidence to support this. The portfolio holder for Housing Services, Ian Tate, had previously told an incredulous audience that there was no need for affordable housing on the site, as there is considerable provision of affordable housing within central Winchester. Nobody had the wit to quiz Henderson on their credentials, about which Charles Glover cast doubts in an article in last week's Sunday Times. That article, on the centre page of a national newspaper, and the publicity given to the ruling by Mrs. Justice Lang, meant that this issue is now in the national arena. How long can our leader and his beleaguered henchmen hold out? Jeff Bruty, Manningford Close, Winchester.
And again, Pauline Moore, 40 years on, nothing has changed. Sir, perhaps it is not altogether surprising that the new council is sometimes regarded by Wintonians as remote. This is a quote from a book on Winchester by Barbara Carpenter Turner and was published in 1980. It is interesting to note that this quote, with reference to the council being remote, was referring to the new council of 1974. Given the campaign Winchester Deserves Better, which is trying to get the current council to listen to the people of Winchester, it seems nothing has changed in 40 years. Their responses to the recent decision that their actions over the Silver Hill development were illegal is yet more proof that they consider themselves above listening to the wishes of the majority of this town. It would also be interesting to know what Barbara Carpenter Turner would have made of all this. She worked tirelessly to protect Winchester, and it is heartening to know that Councillor Gottlieb has taken up the cudgel. So, all who want to see Winchester remain a vital place, a city which makes its own contribution to the life of the nation, should join the campaign. If we shout loud enough, we could make a difference. Perhaps the council will come out of its ivory tower and listen, not only on Silver Hill, but all the other contentious developments that they are considering threaten our lovely city. Henderson, which had another scheme to demolish parts of London Smithfield Market thrown out as wholly unacceptable, should note that it cannot ride roughshod over Wintonians, and we may not win the fight, but we will give them a bloody nose. And that was from Pauline Moore, King Alfred Place, Winchester.
And that was the last letter to the editor. Thank you to all of our contributors. Now time for your say. Passers-by in the Winchester area were asked, do you agree with MPs that primary school pupils get sex and relationship education? Shirley's got the answers.
Well, the first one who was asked about this is Jean Thorpe, 67, retired, of Colebrook Place, Winchester. And she said, I think it should come from families, from mum and dad. If the family broach it, it's better. I don't think children always want to talk about that in school when they're with their mates. And the second person is John Froud, 53, countryside ranger of Cheriton Road, Winchester. And he said, I think parents should be doing it at primary school age. Children are too young at that age to be taught in school. Childhood should remain childhood for as long as possible. And the third opinion comes from Kate Shaw, 38 years old, an insurance broker of Hiltingbury Road, Chandler's Ford. And she said, I think it's down to the parents. But if they don't, then somebody should. There's definitely an argument for it. If it's done carefully and considerately and age-dependent, It's a good thing. And lastly, Derek Rutherford, 66, retired of Andover Road, Winchester. He said, I think it's an issue that has to be discussed, both by parents and schools, but it should be a broad discussion that involves parents so they understand what the schools are trying to do.
We're now going back through the mists of time into our dusty records for historical news items from our files, starting with 25 years ago, read by Noel.
Yes, here's two items from February the 16th, 1919, headlined Abbey House Marks 1,000 Years. Abbey House in the Broadway, a building with a wealth of history, is to be the subject of an exhibition next week. Archaeological finds, photographs and copies of documents will bring to life a house that for almost a century has been closely associated with the Mayor of Winchester. But its history goes back many centuries. The name Abbey House itself refers to the site on which it stands. And the other item is, despite strong opposition from local residents, Winchester City Council's Planning Policy Committee voted 9-8 in favour of a proposal to construct a 35-metre telecommunications mast at Newhouse Farm, Northington. British Telecom requires the tower and its accompanying single-storey building to be part of its network for cellular portable telephones. The proposal stated that the committee would grant planning permission for the Northington site on condition British Telecom dropped its appeal against another site at Abbotstone Down.
Let's go back 50 years ago now, Jane.
50 years ago was February the 20th, 1965. 200 died on roads. Although there were only 33 more traffic accidents on Hampshire and the Isle of Wight roads in 1964 than in the previous year, the number of fatalities is 47. This is revealed in the annual report on road accidents by the Chief Constable of Hampshire, Mr. Douglas Osmond. In a total of 13,730 accidents, 5,311 involved a personal injury and 202 died. There is no doubt that the accidents which occurred on the roads in 1964 were of a more serious nature and impacts were far more violent, most probably due to the higher speed of vehicles, the Chief Constable says. And another one. The arrangements for paying the higher retirement and widows' pensions from March the 29th to pensioners in the Winchester area were announced this week by Mr. S. L. Hancock, manager of the local Pensions and National Insurance Office. The standard rates of retirement pensions will be raised from £3.07.6 a week to £4 for a single pensioner and from £5.09 a week to £6.10 for a married couple.
OK, it's back to 100 years ago now, Shirley.
Yes, 100 years ago. February 20th, 1915. This is two parts to this one. There's been a change in the military population of Winchester, so to speak, within the past day or two. On Thursday, the men of the East, North and South Lancashire battalions of Kitchener's Army removed to other quarters, and their places in Winchester were taken by battalions of the King's Own Scottish Borderers, the Highland Light Infantry and the Scottish Rifles, also of the New Army. Secondly, an interesting ceremony occurred on Monday afternoon at what may be called the Churnock House branch of the Winchester Divisional Red Cross Hospital, of which Mrs. C. H. Gould is commandant in charge, and which is staffed by her detachment, Hants 34, with, of course, a staff of professional nurses. The occasion was the dedication of the hospital by the Bishop of Southampton, the service taking place in the nicely appointed chapel into which one of the large rooms has been converted. The bishop, in the course of the service, gave a short address, remarking that the way in which the British Red Cross Society had answered the call was a great encouragement to those in authority.
Well, it's back to 200 years ago. Over to you, Noel.
Yes, February the 20th, 1815, and two items about a war 100 years before that previous one. Officers in Belgium given their orders. The officers of the English corps stationed in Belgium, who were in England, have received orders to join their regiments and successively arrive. All the English and Hanoverian regiments are kept quite complete, and we daily see detachments, both of infantry and cavalry, arrive to be incorporated with them. It is affirmed, upon good authority, that on the arrival of Lord Castlereagh in London, an important question is to be determined, whether the army which occupies the countries between the Maes and the North Sea will be augmented. In that case, we expect 20,000 veteran English troops, who have served under the great Duke of Wellington, and also 10,000 Hanoverians. And the second extract from a letter from Rome, dated January the 29th. The Neapolitan troops have not yet penetrated into our city, but keep it, as it were, in a state of blockade, and the interrupted communications with the Kingdom of Naples are becoming very difficult. There are 25,000 men about Rome. We are assured that there are, in the number, some Austrian battalions. However, we cannot confirm this, as we can see only Neapolitan bivouacs from our wall. Patrols of lancers have had the audacity to ride even to the gates of the city. They were open, and we are without defence.
And we're back into the present, and Jane's going to read an alternative look at the news, because she's got Belgarum Diary.
And Belgarum has two items in the diary this week. Firstly, broadcast interrupted by film crew van fuel spillage. A television broadcast outside Winchester Guildhall was interrupted last week as 40 litres of fuel spilled onto the Broadway. A Mercedes van belonging to the BBC film crews started leaking diesel at around 9:40 p.m. last Wednesday, covering parts of the car park by King Alfred's statue. Firefighters spent 45 minutes mopping up the mess using Environment Agency absorbency pads. Watch manager Dan Jocelyn said, "They noticed it just before they went on air and we worked around them." BBC reporter Roger Finn was due to broadcast live from outside the Guildhall after a High Court judge ruled that Winchester City Council acted unlawfully over the Silver Hill scheme. The Highways Agency took over the road for final maintenance at 11:20 p.m. And that's accompanied by a photograph of the film crew and the firefighters standing round with a great trickle of diesel trailing across the road from the middle of the road towards the Guildhall. And item is, it would have been a different story had Arthur reigned. TV series Wolf Hall is stoking interest in the Tudor period of English history that ran from the end of the War of the Roses in 1485 to the death of Elizabeth I in 1603. Belgarum was wondering how many people were aware that one of the key figures at the time was born in Winchester. Arthur Tudor was the first son of Henry VII and Elizabeth of York, born in September 1486 at Winchester Cathedral Priory, now better known as the Deanery. He packed a lot into his short life, marrying Catherine of Aragon at the age of 11, but dying at 15 in 1502. Henry VII lived on until 1509, when the throne was taken by Prince Henry, better known as Henry VIII. Had Arthur lived to become King Arthur I, would we have seen the cataclysmic dissolution of the monasteries and the break with the Roman Catholic Church, both initiated by Arthur's younger brother? English history would have been very different. And there's a delightful painting of Arthur Tudor, painted in 1501, with a red hat and looking very much as if he could be played by Damien Hirst, possibly, in the next production. I meant, of course, the wonderful red-headed actor Damien Lewis, who's currently playing Henry VIII.
Now we've got the editorial comment, and it's read by Shirley.
Yes. This is headed, "Best interests of our city must come first." The fallout from last week's High Court judicial review into the Silver Hill scheme is just beginning, as this newspaper reports this week. Council leader Rob Humby has stepped down from leading the Conservatives, and Labour stalwart Chris Pines has also decided to fall on his sword. But many people will be puzzled, not least those who feature in our Silver Hill Letters pages special here, that Councillor Humby still insists on standing by decisions which were clearly shown up for being ill-advised by the court. There's no doubt that tonight's, that's last night, full council meeting would be somewhat lively, to say the least. But what all sides should do now is to resist the chance for point scoring, political or any other, and put the interests of this city to the fore. It makes us wonder what that great and much-loved campaigner and friend of Winchester, Alan Weeks, would have made of it all. As our report on page 2 highlights, this great Wintonian's sole objective was to do right for the city he loved. There is much to learn from this modest man's legacy.
It's time for First Person. Who's the author this week then, Noel?
It's Ronald Allison. And he says his headline is Picking Up Where I Left Off. As I was saying before I was so rudely interrupted in October... No, that's not right. True, my normal life was interrupted, but not rudely. The need for a hip replacement meant I found myself once again in Southampton in the expert hands of the medical wonder workers. My other hip had been replaced a few years earlier. And once again, I received excellent care and attention from all involved. That continued even after I'd returned home, and I cannot praise too highly the care and assistance I received from the Hampshire County Council's care services. 2 home visits each day for the first 3 weeks were of tremendous help, particularly as every one of those who came was cheerful, tactful, and thoroughly professional. So too were the district nurses. That such services were on hand was news to me and made a welcome change from the seemingly never-ending criticism of our health services. It is a genuine concern that our national politicians seem to see the NHS as an issue to be tossed around in their election campaigning rather than seriously working to maintain and improve one of our great national assets. Of course there are problems, and these will increase in our ageing and longer-lasting lives. All the more reason, surely, to take healthcare out of the political battles and treat it as a special case. Back for a moment to my own experience, or rather, our experiences. I ought to explain here that after I came home from hospital, I was joined on crutches by my wife Jennifer, who had tripped over a curb and broken her foot. We made an interesting pair. We knew we had a caring son and good friends and neighbours, but my word, how they rallied round and gave us every possible assistance. Shopping, lifts in cars, and generally making sure we were okay. They were there for us. I think we both experienced the same kind of reaction away from the house. As we tottered around Winchester on our crutches, or for me, by now, stick, people moved aside, held open doors, brought our coffees to our table, packed our bags at the checkouts, and were just generally helpful. The only time I felt in any danger was when confronted by a child hurtling towards me on a scooter, but that happens in any case. So, at a time when the news from around the world is so often so horrifying, and here at home there is usually at least one extremely unpleasant story to lead the bulletins, I am pleased to return to the Chronicle with a cheerful tale to tell. My thanks to all concerned.
And here's some things that might be of interest. The first one is the Mayor of Winchester Charities for 2014-15, and this will feature a talk in Abbey House, which is the Mayor's home, on Wednesday the 4th of March from 10:30 to 12:30, and it's by the Mayor herself, Councillor Eileen Berry, who will be giving a talk, My Life with Poetry. Tickets will be £8, including coffee. And you can get some forms from the information office, but I have a name and telephone number here. Denise Baker, 01962 852 709. There are some talks and meetings on Fridays. There's a coffee morning and shop, and that's the Salvation Army in Parchment Street, Winchester SO238AZ, from 9 in the morning until 11. There are stalls, clothes, refreshments. Any further information is a telephone number, 01962 854 239. Every Monday, the Singing for Wellbeing at the United Church, Jury Street, Winchester, SO238RZ. That's from 1:30pm to 3pm. For people with some memory loss to meet and sing together in a social environment. Partners and carers invited to attend. Winchester Live at Home Scheme. 01962 890995, or www.wlahs.org, and that's for any further information. Lighting up time ends on Friday the 20th of Feb at 7:09am and it begins at 5:30pm. And on Wednesday the 25th of February it ends at 6:59am and begins at 5:38pm. If you know someone who is sight impaired and would like to receive our recordings, or if you have a problem with the recording you've received from us, please telephone Irene Dowding on 01962 870 370. And if there's a problem with your Sapphire player, please try plugging it in and recharging before returning it as faulty. Now we're going to continue with further items of general news, starting with one read by Jane.
And here we have Veteran Frank, 90, takes to the sky again. Second World War flyer gets special birthday trip. The last time he took to the skies, he was engaged in deadly dogfights with the Luftwaffe. But this time, Frank Damerel enjoyed a more relaxing journey across the stunning landscape of Hampshire and the South. The Second World War veteran fulfilled his dream when he took the controls of an aeroplane for the first time in 72 years. The great-grandfather from Chandler's Ford set off from Lower Upham Airfield near Bishop's Waltham for an hour-long trip around his former home of Bosham in West Sussex at speeds of up to 100 miles per hour. His family organised the weekend trip in partnership with Solent Flight for his 90th birthday to relive his days in the Royal Canadian Air Force from 1942 to 1945. Enrolling at 18, he eventually became a navigator in the iconic de Havilland DH-98 Mosquito aircraft, involved in perilous night flights and patrols over German-occupied Europe. The pensioner beamed from ear to ear as he climbed into the cockpit of an Icarus C-42 light aircraft, wearing a blue shirt with the Royal Canadian emblem. And despite some initial turbulence, he calmly guided the plane as if he were in his teens again, taking over from pilot Patrick O'Toole, who was in charge of take-off and landing. Afterwards, Frank said, "It was a thoroughly enjoyable and a great experience. It was a little bit strange taking the controls, but I quickly got used to it, although it was quite bumpy with the strong wind. It's got it out of my system, and while I was up there, I did realise I was no longer 18 again. The only unfortunate thing is I don't believe this aircraft was meant for aerobatics, which I used to enjoy, and I had hoped to waggle my wings while passing over friends' homes in Bosham." During the war, Frank was responsible for operating the aircraft radar and radio alongside his pilot. Once, they narrowly escaped being brought down when straying close to the German-occupied French port of Dieppe. He added, "It had its moments, but you got used to it. I might not have a lot of money, but I've got a great treasure chest full of memories." And there are two photographs, one of Frank before his flight from Upham Airfield in an Icarus 42, holding the aircraft and looking very attached to it. And the other is a photograph of an actual mosquito flying above the sea in Gibraltar in 1945.
And this one is headed, "Ideas Resonate with Students." Eastleigh College has welcomed a sound installation and film artist as part of its visiting artists program. Stephen Cornford, whose work has been exhibited in the UK, Europe and Asia, gave pre-degree foundation diploma in art, design and media students insight into what he does. He is a previous research fellow at the Sonic Art Research Unit of Oxford Brookes University and is interested in consumer audio electrics. Mr. Cornford reconfigures devices to achieve a range of new senses and noises. His recent migration installation of 97 dictaphones in his studio wall mimicked the sound of migrating birds and insects. He said, "The aim of my talk was to inspire the students by showing how I have developed my work and how you can often start a piece which can lead on to other work and take you in a different direction." Stephen later led tutorials with several of the students.
Well, we've had a lot about Silver Hill, but here in Talking Point is Councillor Kim Gottlieb's own words. "There's another statue of King Alfred, next to Jesus and Solomon, above the entrance to the Royal Courts of Justice, reflecting his role in the making of English law. He was there to ensure that justice was done, but in truth, the battle over Silver Hill had to be fought and won in court. It's no cause for celebration. We can celebrate when the regeneration of the area is completed in a way that, unlike the dire Henderson Council scheme, truly enhances the fabric, vitality and character of the city. Because the council, at least just now, seems to lack the will and intellect needed to reinvigorate the project, the Winchester Deserves Better campaign will draw together proposals itself and will approach the matter as a not-for-profit venture. If our ideas get adopted by the council, perhaps the £20 to £30 million a developer would have enjoyed could benefit the city instead. We don't pretend to have the answers, but we do have the experience and ambition to find them. Working together with those we have met in recent months from the pool of local talent by the way of architects, planners and other professionals, we will devise a strategy for taking things forward in an orderly and logical fashion. To start, there needs to be some proper thinking, an obvious but often overlooked process. It is needed to identify the right concept for a development that is financially viable, that fulfills functional requirements, i.e. a bus station, and which beautifies and enriches the city, most likely by focusing on its heritage and culture. I stress likely, because at this stage no prescriptive parameters should be set. That thinking should start today and continue from the discussions we have had with over 300 residents back in November, and it must be a fully open and inclusive process. We also need to start today the search for the right professional advisors. There are numerous multidisciplined regeneration-focused consultancies who should be given a free-ranging brief to consider how to master plan the whole site, including the brooks, albeit that later the site might be divided into parcels. A third action for now is a comprehensive analysis of the archaeology on the site, which includes Roman and medieval remains. Developers generally regard archaeology as a hindrance, whereas we will look at it as an opportunity, one that only comes along in 100 years, perhaps to expose and retain features that could become the focus of a visitor attraction to highlight this being the birthplace of England. Only when the devising of the concept is well on its way, which should be later this year, will we look to express its physical form, and we envisage architectural competitions being held to afford the maximum opportunity to involve the public. My own view, for what it's worth, is that amongst numerous other uses, the site could include an indoor market and a large quantum of affordable housing. Physically, it should be broken down into a number of constituent parts and include a range of architectural styles, both period and modern."
Here we have counties police in top 10 for most complaints. PCC says body-worn video cameras will cut grievances. Hampshire Constabulary is one of the most complained-about forces in the country, it has been revealed. The number of grievances about police in the county rose by 10% last year, with almost 1,000 of them made by people unhappy with how their case was dealt with. Hampshire Police blamed the rise on the category of complaints being broadened this year, while Police and Crime Commissioner Simon Hayes believes that the rollout of body-worn video cameras to all officers will dramatically cut the number of complaints. The statistics released by the Independent Police Complaints Commission, the IPCC, show that the rise follows an increase of 8% in the force's recorded complaints during the previous year, with only 8 other forces in the country getting more. Hampshire appears in the top 10 most complained about alongside forces such as Thames Valley, Greater Manchester and Avon and Somerset Police. In total, the force faced 1,819 complaints between 2013 and 2014, each of which can carry multiple allegations. The highest number related to other neglect or failure in duty, which includes allegations with regard to a lack of conscientiousness and diligence concerning their duties. It could also include failure to investigate matters and keep interested parties informed. A complainant may also appeal about the way in which the force has handled their complaint, and 42% of these appeals from the public were upheld by the IPCC. In total, the IPCC upheld 47% of 32 appeals, where people were unhappy that Hampshire Police had not recorded their complaint, and 41% of 70 appeals from people unhappy with how their grievance was investigated. Hampshire Police managed to deal with 818 complaint cases in an average of 96 working days, 5 days quicker than the national average. Mr. Hayes said that the complaints formed a very small percentage of the more than 1 million police contacts made a year, but vowed to monitor the situation.
A great Wintonian. That is the inscription on a new bench paid for by a group of friends to remember a much-loved Winchester campaigner. It was installed in the cathedral's inner close last week to pay tribute to Alan Weeks, who died in 2010, aged 77, after decades of tirelessly campaigning for the good of the city he loved. He led the Winchester City Residents Association for 30 years and was active in campaigns to protect cutting through what Twyford Down, the loss of Bar End wildflower meadows and urban development such as the Brooks Centre. Keith Story, a member of the association, said he is thrilled to see the bench installed. He said, "He did so much it was hard to sum it up in a few words. Though a modest man who held no public office, the inscription on the bench fairly reflects how well he served Winchester and its people." And with this article we have a rather nice picture of the bench with some of the friends of Alan Weeks, that is Phil Yates, and Maurice Sharrett and Keith Story and one or two others as well.
Going batty. Children welcomed the Mayor of Winchester for a spot of ping pong last Saturday. Councillor Eileen Berry joined representatives of the South Wanston Table Tennis Club at the Westgate School to watch local primary school players compete. Six teams from five schools across the district battled it out in the Winchester Table Tennis League competition, seeing South Wanston come in third, beaten to the top by the Western Primary School B team and St Bede. The league resumes in the coming weeks, which will see one team crowned winner from any one of the teams competing, which also include Kingsworthy, the Western A team and Hairstock. Charlotte Smith, club secretary, said, "Previously, our club has nurtured England player Tressa Armitage and Ben Corston, currently ranked 19 in the UK. So now we're looking for the next generation to succeed them." And there's a lovely picture of Eileen Berry standing with the next generation, lots of primary school children in a whole range of colourful T-shirts representing different schools.
And now agency nurses cost £400,000 a month. Health Trust reveals cost of dealing with winter crisis. A Hampshire Hospital Trust is spending £400,000 a month on buying in agency nurses because of the current winter crisis caused by pressure on beds and staff sickness. Many more patients spent Christmas and New Year on wards in Winchester, Basingstoke and Andover than usual, with the knock-on effect that they were fuller going into the new year. Bed blocking has also contributed to problems at Winchester's Royal Hampshire County Hospital, where many patients are ready to be discharged but can't find places in nursing homes or secure care in the community, a county council meeting heard last week. Hampshire Hospital's NHS Foundation Trust Chief Executive Mary Edwards told the Health and Wellbeing Board how the agency nursing bills had been quite a shock to the system. She said she could not believe how few empty beds there were as she toured wards on Christmas Day, when there are usually few patients in her hospitals at that time of year. What added to the post-Christmas problem was that we didn't clear out like we usually do, she said. We are constantly running on full. It doesn't take very much at all on top of that. It's just that little tiny bit that means we struggle. We are really only doing urgent surgical care at the moment, which is not good for Hampshire people. The Chronicle has repeatedly highlighted how Hampshire healthcare is struggling to cope this winter. Last month, an 82-year-old woman was left waiting on a trolley at Royal Hampshire County Hospital's A&E department for 12 hours after suffering a heart attack. Managers there have also been pleading for volunteers from non-medical departments to help feed the sick on the wards. Mrs. Edwards' comments came despite a whistleblower saying there weren't enough staff to handle the workload at Winchester. Around 200 planned operations were cancelled across West Hampshire during January, though Southampton General has now restarted non-emergency surgery. Flu cases are higher this winter than for the past 3 years, and there have also been increased numbers of elderly being admitted with other respiratory ailments than expected. The meeting heard how an extra £5.2 million has been spent on providing extra consultants, nurses, hospital beds and ambulances, but all the systems are still pushed to the limit. A further £1.47 million has been added spent boosting community care through measures such as dozens of extra nursing home beds and more hospital discharge teams. And there is a photograph enclosing this of the Royal Hampshire County Hospital with Mary Edwards looking slightly anxious about the situation.
Concern over piecemeal development. Residents in a leafy Winchester suburb are losing their privacy to new housing schemes without the chance to object. City planners were warned. Piecemeal development is continuing to change the character of Chilbolton Avenue, Winchester City Council heard as it approved 6 further new homes on the road. Ward Councillor Anne Weir told the planning committee that families were worried by increasingly intrusive and overbearing projects, with the latest scheme set to replace 4 homes with 22. The new 3 and 4 bed townhouses will be developer Alfred Holmes' 3rd project in the area since 2013. The firm recently completed 12 homes nearby and has started work on another 4 next door. Fraser Hymas of Stockers Avenue told planners that the work had allowed people in his street to peer into living rooms and even showers. We are concerned that the development of 49 Chilbolton Avenue has been cited as a precedent, he said. This was approved without consultation of residents of Stockers Avenue, where the massing effect is greatest. It's very, very open, and there is total lack of privacy that we're all experiencing along Stockers Avenue. It's not just us, it's everyone. Accelerated development in the area, with detached houses being replaced by several smaller units, has long generated controversy.
Students get a close look at a £5 million college science centre. Students visit the site to see how the building work is progressing. Construction of a new £5 million science centre at an Eastleigh college is now underway. Barton Peveril's college's 3-storey building will house 12 state-of-the-art labs and preparation rooms for biology, chemistry, physics and electronics. It also includes a classroom space, a cafe and large areas for private study. Its quirky focal point is a brise soleil, solar shade to me, to deflect sunlight from the south-facing glass elevation to help the building's green credentials by way of sustainable design. It is the second major campus redevelopment project to be designed by HNW Architects and built by Fareham-based Amiri Construction, following on from a £4.2 million classroom block and media centre which opened last summer. The block is already reaping the benefits of green technology through its photovoltaic roof panels and rainwater harvesting system. Like the former centre, it has been funded by a combination of the college's capital reserves, planning borrowing and government grants. Barton Peveril principal Jonathan Prest said, "Ongoing investment is first-class teaching facilities underpins our commitment to preparing teenagers for higher education, apprenticeships and fulfilling careers in an increasingly scientific world. STEM subjects, science, technology, engineering and maths, are an important part of the local plan for generating wealth and opportunity, and I'm sure that this new building will inspire even more young people to study these vital subjects in the future."
And now, Marwell bans children's scooters after near misses. Bosses at a top Winchester attraction have said that they have been left with no choice but to ban scooters following a series of complaints by visitors. Children will no longer be able to ride around Marwell Zoo on two wheels when a ban comes into effect next month. Zoo chiefs said they have been forced to outlaw scooters after a series of near misses and a flouting of existing rules by some parents. Marwell introduced new rules last year that said only younger children and wearing helmets were permitted to ride scooters. But as a result of parents smuggling scooters into the park for older children and not ensuring safety gear was being worn, they have been forced to ban them entirely. A statement confirming the decision read, "Although the number of scooters in the zoo has fallen, we are still experiencing feedback from guests based on scooter misuse and dealing with a range of issues, such as a minority of guests who smuggle scooters onto the site for older children to use. We also determined that wearing the helmets was essential for children riding scooters on hard surfaces. Unfortunately, with some guests preferring children in their care to ride unprotected, we have found the wearing of helmets impossible to police. We actively tried to find a middle ground, but now feel that we have to fall in line with other attractions who have regretfully decided that scooters and similar push-alongs are no longer appropriate for this site. The zoo already outlaws other push-along transport, including roller skates, rollerblades, bikes and tricycles. News of the ban, which comes into effect at the end of next month, has been largely welcomed by visitors to the attraction." And that's accompanied by a photograph of a young child on a scooter wearing rather appropriate leopard skin coloured Wellingtons, with a group of three meerkats looking on with interest.
Seven steps to confidence. Winchester school children have taken part in a new programme to boost self-esteem. In light of the rising numbers of teenagers with mental health issues, King's School has introduced the Seven Habits of Highly Effective Teenagers programme. The seven-step program aims to help children encourage their peers by increasing their awareness of others and being more positive. It stems from Sean Covey's book of the same title, which teaches children about the importance of being open-minded and boosting conversation between themselves and their parents. Head teacher Matthew Leeming said, "At King's, we feel that in many ways we currently do a great job of preparing our pupils for life beyond secondary school. We balance our academic provision with a diverse range of extracurricular activities, trips, business and enterprise opportunities, and careers advice to help our pupils grow and develop in all aspects of their lives. However, the world is ever-changing, and we recognise that we need to move with it if we are to fully support the children in our care and ensure they leave us happy, confident and ready to cope with whatever life throws at them."
Greens announce election candidate. Winchester Green Party has announced its candidate for the general election. Dr. Michael Wilkes will bid to become MP for Winchester and Chandler's Ford in May. The former GP, now a forensic physician with the police, is set to campaign against the outsourcing of public services and the failures of unregulated capitalism. He said, "The country is seeing a wholesale contracting out of public services to private companies. A lot of our taxation goes straight into private shareholders' pockets. Private companies running transport and utility services put profit ahead of customers. Look at the deterioration of local bus services here in Winchester." He'll be Winchester's first Green candidate at a general election since 1987, when Julie Walker won 565 votes.
And here the community hub to boost town's wares. Love was in the air on the streets of Bishop's Waltham as locals celebrated the launch of an online community hub. Volunteers decked the road with heart-shaped balloons and schmoozed passers-by with Valentine's Day treats of heart-shaped biscuits to promote a new website promoting tourism in the town. LoveBishopsWaltham.com was launched last Saturday and offers information on sightseeing, local history, shops, events and clubs. Aimed at visitors, businesses and long-time residents, the site will be key to the market town's commercial strategy over the next few years. The website, like the biscuits, was created by Bishop's Waltham Town Team, a community consortium looking to future-proof the historic high street as retail competition grows. Tony Kippenberger, chairman of the town team, said, "We recognise that in this day and age, the first place that the majority of people look for information is the internet. Our new website will allow local people to find out more about the place where they live and will form the central pillar of a larger marketing campaign to encourage visitors." And there's a photograph of Tony Kippenberger with a group of other supporters and a lovely basket of heart-shaped biscuits, which he's offering to people in the streets of Bishop Waltham.
This one is headed, "Retired Officer Died After Fall." A retired police officer who served a Hampshire community for decades died after a fall. Grandfather of two, Peter Churchwood, lived with his wife Pauline at their home in Winchester. The 74-year-old served as a police officer in Allsford during the 1960s, 70s and 80s. He died on December 28th at the Royal Hampshire County Hospital in Winchester after his condition deteriorated following the fall at his home in Burley Road. His widow, Pauline, told an inquest in Winchester her husband was suffering from flu. She added that he had a stroke 15 years ago, which led to him suffering from vertigo and tinnitus. Mrs. Churchwood found him unconscious on the stairs before he was taken to the RHCH. Dr. Arthur Goldsmith, a consultant at the RHCH, said Mr. Churchwood suffered from neck injuries and had a heart attack, which led to him falling into a coma. Coroner Graham Short recorded a verdict of accidental death. After the hearing, Mr. Churchwood's daughter, Claire North, from Fareham, described her father as a family man who was known for his work with the Christian Missionary Society. She also praised the staff at the RHCH who treated him.
And here's the Q&A column, My Winchester. Mike Cromie, 63, semi-retired of Froman Road Week, shares his favourite things about the city. "What's your favourite restaurant or cafe?" "Well, it's difficult, actually. It depends what I feel like at the time. I do like Lock Fine, Bangkok Brasserie, Bengal Sage and El Sabio." "Favourite pub or bar?" "A Crown and Anchor at the bottom of the High Street. It's a local pub. There aren't many pubs in Winchester. They're all soup and basket joints." "Favourite shop?" "I don't really do shopping, so I don't have a favourite." "Favourite view?" "Top of St Giles's Hill. It's a lovely view. I haven't been up there for a while." "Favourite building?" "When you're a local anywhere, you walk around and don't look up. The Guildhall is ghastly, but I do like the Great Hall with Queen Eleanor's garden in the back. It's lovely." "Who or what is Winchester's biggest icon?" Now, the what is the cathedral, and the hue would probably be King Alfred. What's Winchester's best-kept secret? There's a lovely little secret garden which is off the roads around St. Cross, but I can't remember exactly where it is. There's a little gate and play area. It's very peaceful and out of the way. What's the best thing about Winchester? You're never far from the countryside, and there's some nice countryside round Winchester. And the worst? It's too parochial. Everyone knows each other's business. It's really not a big city. It's like a village. If there was one thing you could change about the city, what would it be? Oh, the traffic system's a nightmare. We really deserve a better park and ride. Shut the city off to traffic completely apart from buses. Describe Winchester in a sentence. It's a lovely city, but parochial, and the shopping centre is not great unless you have a lot of money.
And now we have hundreds take part in Haven's Tea Party fundraiser. It was time for tea across Hampshire, as teapots brewed to help make a stand against breast cancer. Hundreds of people joined celebrities such as Sally Taylor and actress Sarah Parrish to raise their bone china for the Haven Wessex £1 million tea party. The week-long event helped to raise funds for a specialist breast cancer centre set to open in Titchfield this autumn, which will provide free support to anyone affected by the devastating disease. From builders dedicating their treasured tea breaks to the good cause, to bus drivers and groups of friends who used it as a great excuse to catch up, the money has been rolling in to help the charity hit its £1.7 million target to refurbish the building. Those who took part included James Judd and Dan Carpenter from Three Valley Construction, who had a cuppa in between their work at the site of the cancer centre. Others getting involved included bus drivers at First Bus Southampton and 20-year-old cancer survivor Olivia Buckland, who hosted her tea party at Hillhead Sailing Club in Fareham. Meanwhile, Julia Mitchell, a member of the charity's fundraising committee, went vintage for her party, which saw 40 of her friends descend on her home in Shawford to enjoy tea and cakes. And there's a photo of Julia with her husband Chris and a lot of ladies surrounding a table absolutely piled high with beautiful china cups and saucers and the most delicious selection of scones, sandwiches, cakes and everything you can imagine.
Campaigner warns of further action. Silver Hill campaigner Gim Gottlieb says he will take further action against his own council if it does not change its stance. Councillor Gottlieb, a Conservative member of the ruling group, says the whole planning permission for the scheme for shops and flats is now unsustainable. He said, "I have made it clear I won't hesitate to take further legal action if the council comes up with new angles." Councillor Gottlieb was referring to the council's suggestion that the planning permission granted last December is unaffected by the High Court judgment. He has written to Secretary of State Eric Pickles, urging him to call in the scheme. The council has said it is considering its position and may appeal the ruling. Meanwhile, following the resignation of Councillor Humby, three other city bosses, Deputy Leader Councillor Victoria Weston, Chief Executive Simon Eden and Corporate Director Steve Tilbury, have defied calls to resign after the bombshell legal ruling threw the City Council development into turmoil. Calling on the entire Cabinet to resign alongside Messrs Eden and Tilbury, Winchester Labour Party Chairman Peter Rees said, "These members and officers have been responsible for the most damning and forensic condemnation of their processes and procedures regarding Silver Hill. They have consistently ignored the will of the people of Winchester, taken inadequate and inaccurate advice, failed to observe EU procurement regulations, and used the planning process to approve a scheme that should have been resubmitted."
City hotel worker acquitted of rape. Jurors this week acquitted a Winchester Hotel Duvan worker of raping a young woman at his bedsit. Carlos Silva was cleared of one rape charge at the city's Crown Court on Monday following a five-day trial. His alleged victim, who cannot be named for legal reasons, claimed the 48-year-old had targeted her after she left friends to visit a kebab shop near the Theatre Royal in Winchester and led her back to his flat. But Mr. Silva consistently denied the charge, saying the woman initiated the encounter and, whilst drunk, was not overly affected by alcohol. The sexual act was her initiative, he told the court. I wasn't interested in having sex with anyone. She unbuttoned my shirt and jeans, he added. Giving evidence last week, the woman said Mr. Silva had sat down next to her as she ate a burger on the night of September the 20th, 2013, striking up a conversation that made her feel uncomfortable. She said that when she rose to leave, he propelled her along the pavement back to his flat by the waist. The court heard how she rang a female friend as they walked, leaving a message that she should come and find her, and texted the word help to her boyfriend just before the alleged rape. She said she wept during the attack, which left her in pain, adding, in my head I was panicking, but I didn't want to do anything to annoy him. I freaked out and closed my eyes. I was scared. She said she eventually managed to wriggle away from Mr. Silva, whom she had not met before, and fled back onto the street. But Mr. Silva said he was walking back to his City Road bedsit following a shift at the Hotel Duvan in Southgate Street when he crossed Jury Street to where the woman was sitting eating a burger on a doorstep. He said he was tired and wanted somewhere to sit down. I wanted to relax a little bit and freshen up. I was tired and stressed to sit down, relax, smoke and take fresh air on my head, he said. I wanted to relieve pressure from my work, he added. Mr. Silva said the woman started the conversation. I didn't want to be rude to a person who wanted to talk to me.
And now new homes would grow village by 10%. Villagers have ramped up their fight against plans to build on open countryside in King Somborne. Almost 120 residents turned out to a public meeting to take on plans for 78 homes, which locals fear will spoil the village and pose road safety threats. Villagers are looking for local experts in planning, media, ecology and campaign tactics to launch a formal assault on the controversial scheme. The meeting, joined by Romsey MP and former King Somborne resident Caroline Noakes, heard concerns for pressure on school places and a precedent being set for further house building. Critics have previously said country lanes would not cope with extra traffic, especially after Stagecoach axed its bus service for the village, and there would be a greater risk of accidents. Resident Sanja Roden said, I know a lot of people that are against it that weren't able to go to the meeting. I haven't spoken to anyone that's for it. She is preparing a website and online petition ahead of Test Valley Borough Council's planning committee this month. Ms. Noakes said, it would be a tragedy to spoil the character of what is really a lovely village. The scheme, expected to house 200 people, would increase the number of houses in the village by around 10%.
IT system to save council £200 million. Hampshire's civic chief has praised a new business and IT scheme which is set to save £200 million by 2018. I'm sorry, 2016. Councillor Roy Perry, pictured here in this article, the leader of Hampshire County Council, hailed the new integrated business centre that will handle back office services such as payroll, purchasing, recruitment and HR functions. The move is considered one of the biggest operational changes in the council's history. It is designed to bolster a new partnership between Hampshire Constabulary and Hampshire Fire and Rescue Service, the first of its kind in England following its inception last year. Speaking at an audit meeting, Councillor Perry said, having to remove more than £200 million of our expenditure by 2016 with least impact on frontline services means we have had to dramatically change the way we do business. Oxfordshire County Council is set to join the scheme later this year. The new system comes as the council prepares to cut a further £100 million from the budget by 2017.
Council bending rules over housing. Discount houses set to be built in Village Field. 30 houses are set to be built in a field near Bishop's Waltham after city planners brought forward a contentious scheme. Winchester City Council is bending its own rules in order to build discount houses off Clewers Lane, Waltham Chase, a planning committee heard. Civic chiefs received 23 objections from residents who were warned that new families were unlikely to be local and extra traffic could endanger pedestrians. The Greenfield site was earmarked for development as part of the council's local plan to build 250 homes in the area by 2031, but was brought forward by the recent meeting's decision to grant early planning permission. Councillor Frank Pearson told the planning committee that bending council policy, which says sites should only be developed after the plan's adoption next year, would open the door to other property firms. Half the approved units will be discounted, but Housing Association of all Association Alder Communities required planning permission by April, long before the start of local plan in July 2016. Lindsay Aldington, housing consultant for the group, warned that refusal would waste a one-off opportunity for them to build cheaper homes. She said, "If it fails today, I've got no doubt it'll be back in front of you soon, and it will be somebody who isn't trying to provide affordable housing, who isn't going to use profits to plough back into more affordable housing. It'll be something that's lost forever. If we wait, it's people we're not helping who we could be helping now." The cut-rate homes could save families around £60,000, said Councillor Ian Tate, portfolio holder for housing.
And now firms help for ex-military personnel. A Crawley communications firm has signed a covenant pledging practical support for military veterans. Arkiva has committed help for ex-services personnel returning to the civilian workforce. The firm will offer taster days and staff shadowing, full-time work opportunities and training for the HRT to appreciate skills learnt in the forces. David Crawford, Managing Director of Satellite and Media, said, "Arkiva recognises the unique blend of passion, skill and dedication the armed forces community can bring to a business and has a strong tradition of hiring ex-service personnel as a result. Signing the Armed Forces Corporate Covenant was a natural next step for us and builds on a commitment we have already been putting into practice for a number of years."
Sculpture set to be town's main attraction. A new lion-inspired piece of art hopes to bring pride to Hampshire town. Former Eastleigh MP Lord David Chichi officially unveiled the new sculpture, commissioned by the Eastleigh Lions Club to commemorate the group's 50th anniversary at the Lee Road Recreation Ground. It is made from four sheets of iron that come together and, when viewed from a certain angle, form the image of a lion. Words such as community and fundraising have been inscribed into the piece to reflect the ideals that the club cares about. The project, done by Waterlooville firm ICEE, has been funded by the Lions and developer contributions. The area will be known as Lions Speaker's Corner. Eastleigh Mayor Tony Noyce and members of Eastleigh Lions were also present.
That, I'm afraid, is the end of all our extracts for this week, ending 20th of February 2015. Thank you to our editors, Bill Argos, Irene Dowding and Kate Butler. Thanks to our copying and dispatch and memory stick preparation teams. And thanks to our readers. Goodbye to Shirley Parnell.
Goodbye.
Northrop Tracy.
Goodbye.
And Jane Harding.
Goodbye.
And from me, Roy Faithful, thank you for listening. Goodbye for now. And I hope you have an enjoyable week ahead. When you finish with this week's recording, please put the memory stick back in the wallet with a laminated card, and please place the address label inside the wallet too, and return the wallet as soon as you've finished reading it. Not reading it, listening to it. Thank you, and goodbye again.